Hello, and welcome to the Cardinal News of Virginia, a podcast from Cardinal News. We're a nonprofit, independent newsroom. We serve Southwest and Southside Virginia at cardinalnews.org, and I am Dutchie Jessie. The Cardinal podcast is sponsored by the Virginia Rural Health Association, improving the lives of rural Virginians through education, advocacy, and cooperative partnerships. Today, I am speaking with our policy and politics reporter, and that's Elizabeth Beyer. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hey, Dutchie, how are you?
I'm great, and thank you for sitting down. You recently worked on a story that was so interesting about the formula that FEMA uses when deciding relief, disaster relief, to individuals and Virginia and communities, I believe. So we're going to get right into it because I found it to be so interesting, and it was a real eye-opener. You talked to some people affected recently by some pretty severe flooding. So let's get into it right now. So let's get to the formula itself and what are we talking about here? Which formula that FEMA uses?
Right. So FEMA uses a formula to determine whether or not a state qualifies for individual assistance for a disaster. So individual assistance is money that goes directly into the pockets of qualifying people to help them rebuild, repair, or recover after a natural disaster. So a little bit more about that formula. There are a number of different items that are taken into consideration in this formula, and property values are one of them. So property values from across the state are used to determine if a state, Virginia included, qualifies for individual assistance. And Virginia has a unique disparity in that metric because some of the most high cost homes are located in, you know, like Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads in the suburbs around DC. While, you know, in areas like the Southwest part of the state, homes are considerably less expensive. So the inclusion of homes with high property value has caused the threshold for individual assistance to rise in Virginia compared to our neighbors to the west, Kentucky and West Virginia. So the threshold for individual assistance to be approved in places like Southwest Virginia is higher in those neighboring states, West Virginia and Kentucky. Because the financial metrics, they kind of like work in the favor of those states, yeah. Because their statewide property value is considerably lower. So I guess to summarize all of that, the formula used by FEMA, which stands for the Federal Emergency Management Agency, to determine if a state is approved to receive individual assistance following a disaster, that formula can prohibit low-income Virginians from receiving federal aid to rebuild.
Yeah, thank you for a great summary. Just to clarify, that formula you mentioned, real estate assessment, does FEMA look at that, the average Virginia? Do they average all the different places into one average real estate assessment? Is that what's going on here that's throwing it off?
Yeah, so it was my understanding that there's about six different items or metrics that are taken into consideration to, you know, determine whether or not individual assistance can be distributed to a state or a region following a natural disaster. A state's economic stability, its economic resources, mm-hmm. Are one of the major like key metrics, along with property values. So I believe they take, you know, potentially like an average of those property values, but I don't know for sure. I wasn't able to, you know, dive deep into exactly what, you know, FEMA does. I mm-hmm. reached out to FEMA folks who cover the Virginia, Kentucky, West Virginia region. I believe that's region 3. I'm not sure if Kentucky is actually a part of region 3 too. So fact check me if I'm wrong.
Okay. No. Okay.
but yeah, so the responses that I got from FEMA were kind of like high level and I wasn't, you know, able to drill down.
Okay. We are going to get now to the specifics of how this affects people who are in our coverage area. Cardinal News covers Southwest and Southside Virginia. You met some people affected by flooding. So let's get into that, the actual flooding. I feel like on this podcast, we end up talking about flooding a lot because we have had some regions of our state hard hit repeatedly. When Hurricane Helene came through last fall, so September of 2024, that had pretty devastating effects up the coast, like in multiple regions of multiple states. But there's this pocket of Southwest Virginia that, you know, it doesn't have to be as big as Helene, in other words, to affect and have some very catastrophic or disastrous results in particular areas of Cardinal country. So let's go back to February of this year and talk about the flooding that you're specifically referencing for this story.
Right. So the flooding that I'm referencing for this story took place in February 2025. So that's about maybe 4 or 5 months after Helene hit. And a lot of folks in the region at the time the February flooding hit were still and are still today, you know, struggling to rebuild from Helene. So fast, or I guess rewind back to February. Yeah. Hundreds of homes were damaged after a large rainstorm, you know, kind of just slowly made its way.
Yeah, this was the weekend of Valentine's Day, right? Is that when we're talking?
Like an ice storm, rainstorm.
Yeah.
So hundreds of homes were damaged, and about 150 of those were located in the town of Richlands, which is located in Tazewell County. Following the flood in February, FEMA approved public assistance, which is federal aid meant to repair and rebuild public infrastructure. So stuff, you know, owned by the locality or owned by the state, but individual assistance, and that is money that would have gone to people to rebuild or repair homes, was not approved by the federal government because of the aforementioned formula. Mm-hmm. So months after the flood, when I went to visit folks in Richlands this past spring, people were still struggling to rebuild. A lot of them are low-income folks who, you know, lost everything or close to everything in the February flood. Some of them are living in water damaged homes because they have nowhere else to go. And some are effectively homeless and living with relatives because it's, you know, too dangerous to live in their water damaged home. Mm-hmm. You know, issues like mold and air quality and, mm-hmm. you know, it's not great.
It's a health hazard.
It is a health hazard. Yeah. So the maximum amount of money that individuals could have received through FEMA's individual assistance program is set at around $43,000 for the year 2025. I think the actual number is $43,600. And, you know, that's a lot of money to folks who have very little. Mm-hmm. And it could have been, you know, like life-changing for them as they try to recover. But, you know, the February flood didn't reach the threshold necessary to allow for individual aid to be distributed to folks in Richlands or other, you know, affected areas in Southwest Virginia.
You went down and met a couple in Richlands. Sherry and Mike Smith is who I'm referring to, and we are going to show a photo of that couple that that you took when you were down there. Tell me what that visit was like. First of all, I just have to point out, you are in the Richmond area. Well, how long a trip was that from Richmond? Because I point out that because we run into this a lot, especially when we talk to like representatives from the area, lawmakers, they point out that the distance between that part of the state just to Roanoke is 3 hours and something. And then that distance from Roanoke to Richmond is another 3 hours. So we're talking major differences. How long did it take you to get down there? Were you surprised to take a while?
Yeah. I mean, I drive long distances pretty frequently. My family lives in Ohio, so I drive back and forth from mm-hmm. Richmond, Virginia to like the central Ohio area pretty frequently. And that's usually about like a 7 to 9 hour drive. But the trip to Richlands was from Richmond, about 5.5 hours.
Okay. All right. And then,
yeah,
you met Mike and Sherry and tell me about them.
Yeah. So, Mike and Sherry, are on a fixed income, and they had been living in a mobile home that Sherry had owned for over a decade. I think she owned it for about 21 years, and she and Mike had been living in it together for about 16 years. And about 3 feet of water rushed into their home in February and caused so much damage that, you know, they're unable to live there. They've been staying with relatives for the last few months when I met them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was talking to Sherry and Mike, and, you know, Sherry's main thing that just kind of like broke her heart is that, you know, she's living with in-laws. And she said they're good to her, but it's like, it's not her home. Mm-hmm. You know, she wants her home. She wants to be able to like get up, make a cup of coffee, sit down, watch TV in the living room, just do. And she's, again, she said her in-laws are good to her, but she just doesn't feel comfortable doing that in someone else's home. From my
right. Understanding. It's a privacy issue. I think we should sit on that for just a minute, because when I read that, my heart really went out to her, and I thought she's expressing something that so many people go through. It's a privacy issue, but not in terms of protecting yourself. It's just the comfort level, right? The comfort level of sitting in your house, your own place to do whatever you like to do. It's something we take for granted. And then when it's not there, the emotional stress of that she's going through on top of whatever they're having to do to get their home ready to move back in. Will their home be, will she be able to move back into that?
I mean, I'm not someone who can assess property damage.
Does she think? I mean, do you know?
She thinks that they'll have to tear it down. She thinks it's a total loss for them. So
what did you mentioned that they're staying with a relative and they're grateful and all that. What else? How else has it affected their lives? What did they tell you?
When I met with Sherry and Mike, Sherry had said she had just gotten out of the hospital after a bout of pneumonia. And you kind of have to think, like, that's a lung issue. It's a lung illness. Did that come from, you know, like breathing in moldy air? Did it come from like breathing in, you know, anything from like experiencing the cold and the wet in February? Like maybe it was kind of like sitting on her lungs for a while. And Mike Smith, he told me that he is battling lung cancer and cirrhosis of the liver at the same time while going through all of this. So it's kind of like they're just getting pummeled by life from all angles, you know? It's just, yeah, it's a lot.
You talked to another resident down there named Henrietta Johnson. Tell me about her.
Yeah, so she lives in the same trailer park as Sherry and Mike Smith. She lives down the street from them. And during that same flood, her mobile home was damaged as well. So I spent some time talking with her, and she told me that she estimated she'll need new insulation in her home, new flooring, and a new back deck or stairs to make her back door accessible. So she walks with a cane, and she's older. I believe she's like in her 60s, and she walks with a cane, and the back door is right off of her bedroom. So she's afraid if there's an emergency, like a fire or something in the middle of the night, she wouldn't be able to get from her bedroom to the front door in time. So that back door was kind of like a lifeline and a source of comfort for her. But now, you know, it sits about, I would estimate like 4 to 5 feet off the ground. And she like found the stairs to her back deck, and she's kind of like leaned them up against the back door of her property so her cats can get in and out. But it's like a person cannot stand on that without it falling away, mm-hmm. potentially getting injured. So, you know, she was able to get some assistance from, I think, you know, local organizations shortly after the flood. Like they replaced some of her appliances, but after that, she wasn't able to get like any more assistance for the replacement of her flooring, her insulation, and, you know, her back deck stairs or her back deck. And she's worried that, you know, there's mold growing in the flooring. She's worried that there's mold growing in the insulation. She said that the flood occurred on her birthday and, it took her about a week to, you know, clean out the mud from her home. So Yeah, it's
yeah. Who else did you talk to in this story? Did you meet anyone else? But also, you know, who else did you use as a source for this story?
Yeah, so I talked to a couple of town officials, Chief Ron Holt, who doubles as the police chief and the town manager in Richlands, and Laura Molo, who is a town council member. They sat down with me, you know, right when I got into town and provided me with like a list of names and numbers of people to reach out to. That's how I got connected with Mike and Sherry Smith. And I walked down the street to, and Laura was with me to get to knock on the door of Henrietta Johnson. Mm-hmm. And aside from them, like prior to this, to kind of get like my footing under me for this story, because, you know, I had heard about like FEMA funding formula from a lot of different people about like, you know, why is it that FEMA isn't providing assistance to folks after the February flood? And I was like, okay, well, what is this? So I reached out to the governor's office and I was able to talk with Rob Ward, who was kind of like the go-between, who's trying to affect change in this area to make it, you know, FEMA assistance a little bit more accessible to folks in the Southwest. And then I talked to some folks to get kind of like estimates and as far as like how much it would cost to, you know, fix Ms. Johnson's home. I think that's everybody I talked to.
Yeah, but you touched on this because my question was going to be, how did you end up on this particular angle of the story, which is the specific funding formula? Because I was curious about that, and it sounds like what you just told me is just multiple people. It's a phrase that you kept hearing, and you kind of wanted to know more about that. Is that correct?
Yeah. So Delegate Will Moorfield, he was one person that, you know, has been saying like the FEMA formula has been working against Southwest Virginia in order to like help them recover from flooding. Like he's been saying that for quite a bit. And I believe Governor Youngkin's, you know, said it during a press conference when he went to visit the area back in April after the February flood and while people were still recovering. So it was like, you know, paying attention to like these lawmakers talk about this. And that was just kind of like that reoccurring, you know, wording that was used.
The theme,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, you know, what is this? Is there, what's it to?
So what are they just shrugging about it though? I mean, is there anyone saying, no, here's the change that needs to happen and here's how we make the change? What are people saying about that?
So I think they are, you know, kind of working to affect change. I know Youngkin was appointed to a task force by President Donald Trump. And that task force is its main, I guess, charge is to kind of like look into how, you know, the way FEMA works can be changed. Mm-hmm. I believe they had their first meeting in May and it was live streamed, so I watched it, but I didn't, you know, hear any specifics as far as like, you know, here's what we're going to do to change this. I think it was more or less just kind of like a meeting that established the task force. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like the wheels of government move so slow when people are waiting and living through disaster. It's one of my main pet peeves, but.
Yeah. I mean, meanwhile, I would want to know the homeowners you talked to and met down there, Elizabeth. So Henrietta and Mike and Sherry, did you talk about this, the funding issue? Did they understand it? Did they have a grasp on it?
I think they did. But we didn't talk about that specifically. I didn't, you know, explicitly say like, oh, what do you think about the FEMA funding formula?
Right. I just wondered, the reason I'm asking is because so often things, when it comes to things coming from government, so assistance, it could be Medicaid, it could be whatever, it's so complex and the things you have to do to secure it or maintain it or apply for it become... that's the barrier. It's so either complex, difficult. It's fraught with confusion and just difficulty. And so often people applying for this kind of assistance already at, you know, maximum stress level, right? So giving up is understandable, or just they're just surviving day to day, trying to, you know, find supplies or find a place to live, whatever it is. So I just wondered, because a lot of times it is so confusing. You can have a college degree and still not understand some of this stuff. And what you just said also was, you know, the wheels of government turn so slowly. Is there another meeting scheduled for this task force?
I need to look into that. There probably is, but...
Okay. Yeah. So maybe, hey, I would like to have you back one day talking about solutions, maybe, you know, getting dealt with. Anything else from this story? Did anything surprise you, Elizabeth?
So one hugely surprising thing to me, and this like might be my own, you know, lack of knowledge about how government works in Virginia, because I'm, you know, I'm still very new to the state. I've only been here for about a year and a half so far, is that there isn't like a standing fund to, you know, managed by the state to help support Virginians in their time of need. Like there's no disaster fund. Mm. There's no standing disaster fund. And, you know, Virginians in Southwest Virginia experienced this back with the, you know, the Hurley floods and the Whitewood floods, where, you know, the General Assembly had to pass legislation in order to like get them state aid after, you know, folks from those areas were denied federal aid through FEMA. So there is no standing fund. However, the General Assembly did include about $50 million for recovery from Hurricane Helene related flooding and the February floods in their budget amendments package this past session. But that piece of legislation didn't go into effect until July 1st, you know, more than 4 months after February flood, almost a full year after the Hurricane Helene floods. And, you know, people still need to apply, qualify, and then wait for the money, assuming they, you know, their applications are approved. And as you just mentioned, you know, it's difficult to figure out how to apply and to kind of like navigate that, that system. I know Laura Molo told me recently that there was a meeting that was held in the Richlands Town Hall to kind of like help educate people on how to apply for the state money to recover from the flooding. But, you know, again, that $50 million will be broken up into two $25 million pots. Mm-hmm. So $25 million is going to go towards individuals as they repair and rebuild, you know, like by the equipment, the tools, the materials that they need to, you know, make their homes livable again, or potentially like put a down payment or buy a new home. And then $25 million will go towards, you know, rebuilding structures to withstand future flooding. So that kind of like shrinks the pot even more, like how much of that $50 million is actually going to be available to people to like rebuild and repair, because another portion of it is going to go towards like, you know, rebuilding other structures. Yeah. And again, that's not a standing disaster fund. It only goes towards folks affected by those two disasters. And once it's gone, it's gone. So.
All right. Yeah. Well, if anything new develops, we know that you and the Cardinal team will be on top of it. So thank you very much, Elizabeth. And I always like to let people know how they can email you if they wanted to get in touch with you. It's Elizabeth@cardinalnews.org. Is your name with a Z or an S?
With a Z.
There we go. All right. Well, thank you so much for your work. I appreciate it. And thanks for stopping by.
Yeah. Thanks, Dutchie. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Cardinal News of Virginia. Thanks to our sponsor, the Virginia Rural Health Association, and also to Sean Eddy of Eddy Alexander for production support, and also to Cardinal News's Zach Shelton. Read all of our paywall-free local news coverage at cardinalnews.org. I'm Dutchie Jesse.